From Aspen Public Radio, it's Valley Roundup, analysis and commentary of news from the Roaring Fork Valley. I'm Elizabeth Stewart Severy. I've got one special guest this week. Randy Essex has been the editor of the Glenwood Springs Post-Independent since 2014, and this week was his last in that position. Randy will be leaving the Roaring Fork Valley for the Motor City, where he will be senior content director for business and auto news and planning at the Detroit Free Press. Before he takes off, we asked him to stop in and reflect on the biggest stories he's covered in his time here. Thanks for being here, Randy.
Thank you.
So, Randy, you've been a frequent guest on Valley Roundup, and in what we think was your very first appearance on this show, you talked about, of all things, the Grand Avenue Bridge. So we'll revisit that. Here you are talking with then-host Roger Adams.
In your editorial, basically you were saying, look, folks, we have a chance here to do something that will improve the downtown area of Glenwood Springs. I also noticed there's letters to your paper that are saying this is the dumbest idea and that something else has to be done.
Well, if the editorial provoked letters that said don't build the bridge, which is certainly one thing that some people in Glenwood Springs think, then I guess it was a success because it got people talking and thinking.
So, Randy, that it seems like maybe that's been a theme of your time here. You haven't shied away from tackling controversial issues and topics, and especially in editorials. Can you talk a little bit about how you see the role of the editor of a local newspaper?
I think it's a leadership role. I think that our job as community journalists is to identify the most important issues facing our community, to do the best journalism that we can with the tools that we have. And it used to be, you're on the air. We had a print product, but now we have websites and we can do video and we can have a lot more interaction with readers directly in that case. And then the third component of that is to try to solve problems. So I have held some forums on housing, on immigration, and some other issues that try to bring people together in a civil way. And I think we've been fairly successful in that regard.
Yeah, and even as you talk about bringing people together, it seems like you're willing to take some unpopular positions or some difficult positions that maybe not everybody is going to agree with and kind of put yourself out there to say maybe this isn't what's comfortable, but maybe it's what's right. Can you talk a little bit about that position as an editor, as somebody who's putting out editorials as well?
Well, look at the history of American journalism and the reason that we have the First Amendment. If I'm an editor and I'm not kicking up some dust and getting people to talk, I'm not doing my job. This is meant to be, on the opinion pages, a robust conversation that invites people in. I have solicited conservative columnists to balance our community contributors. I have 13 monthly community columnists, and seven of those are reliably conservative. And I think that even though I'm the flaming liberal in the valley, that I can count most of those people as my friends. I've had some great breakfasts and email exchanges and conversations with them, and that's the point. Yeah, that's absolutely the point.
Are there some topics or some pieces in specific that stand out to you as being particularly conversation-inducing?
Certainly immigration has. When I came here, I realized that this area has just about every issue facing the United States. It's got environmental issues. There's discussion about climate change. The mountains in Aspen are pretty much bare right now, except for the artificial snow. It's got immigration. It's got income inequality. There are infrastructure issues. The bridge is a piece of that, but we have people who are driving 80 miles one way to work who might live in Battlement Mesa and come to Aspen for a job. So, and I have really been touched, I guess, by many of the immigrants I have met. My wife is a volunteer for English in Action, live in Carbondale, and I've just had an opportunity to meet folks who, in my view, are trying to live the American dream in the greatest way. They're working hard. They want a better life for their children. I've taken up their cause because I think it's the right thing to do. And I don't, you know, a lot of people have said, oh, you favor illegal immigration. And that's not the case. But people who are here, regardless of their status, are important to the economy. They're important to the communities. Cory Gardner has sat in my office, mm-hmm. as have Democratic politicians, and acknowledged we can't deport 11 million people. We can't deport the thousands of people who are in Colorado illegally. We need to find a way to reform our immigration system.
Now, I've noticed that a lot of the Glenwood Post Independent's coverage of immigration looks at individual stories, and there's a sense of trying to capture the issue by looking at individuals. Are there any particular stories that stand out to you that are particularly memorable?
I think it was two summers ago, we met a guy whose father was a citizen, and he has permanent legal residency in the United States. Mm-hmm. He worked on a road crew. He was living in Parachute, Battlement Mesa, working on a road crew up the Crystal River Valley from Carbondale that summer.
Okay.
And his wife, he married a woman in Mexico and brought her to the United States illegally. They had two children here, one of whom had dwarfism and needed very intensive medical care. They got some bad legal advice, which is not uncommon among immigrants here. A lawyer failed to file a necessary waiver when he had the wife go back to Ciudad Juarez, mm-hmm. And she got stuck in Mexico because of that failure. And here's a guy who's doing that long commute and has a child who needs a breathing machine at night, who needs intensive medical care, lots of doctor's appointments. So these two American citizen children were in Mexico with their mother, where the medical care was iffy. And there were advocates who were trying to get her reentry to the United States expedited, which eventually Senator Bennett intervened and helped. That was a very compelling story to me. On Labor Day, we did a story that just looked at the work that we looked at three immigrants and what they do, because critics will say, well, the immigrants are taking American jobs. And I wanted to really look at what is it that they're doing? How hard are they working? What are they willing to do to try to establish themselves and do well for their families here, which is no different than what any of us are trying to do.
So does that mean it's about trying to find the stories that help connect us all as humans, that it's looking at an issue but also finding the human face?
I think that it's important, to put flesh and blood and pathos, mm-hmm. into these issues. And we have done overview policy stories. A point that I have made a lot in commentary is that these folks are our neighbors, that we see them in festivals, that, you know, when I wrote about the immigrant driver's licenses in Colorado and the fact that the Joint Budget Committee had clamped down and mm-hmm. Kind of restricted access or availability of those licenses. These are people who are driving just feet away from us, right. at high speeds. We have an interest, we have a personal stake in their being able to kind of navigate life in a reasonable fashion.
Yeah. Now, in your most recent immigration column, you questioned, like, just what will please critics of immigrants. And in that column you wrote, it's well known that the Post-Independent is an advocate for immigrants. And I'm wondering, as you hold that stance, but also are producing news stories, what do you keep in mind as an editor as you are editing and covering these stories? What kinds of things are you paying close attention to ensure balance and fairness? And
we try to, in fact, we did a long question and answer just 3 or so weeks ago about immigration law, and we want to be sure that we understand the nuances of situations that are affecting people. We want to understand the citizenship process. We want to understand the rights of people who come into the country. In the news columns, we seek balance. We seek to be straightforward. In editing, I try to take out those adjectives that mm-hmm. might indicate sympathy or favor one way or another. Mm-hmm. At a larger news organization, you'll have people doing commentary who are completely apart from the news reporting. We don't have that luxury. And I think that my critics would say that the whole paper is biased. I disagree. I think our news reporting has been straightforward. I don't think we have shied away from printing opposing views. And on the opinion right. page, we've been clear about what we think. And at the same time, some of those columnists who I have recruited and sought out have a completely opposite view. And I'm glad to publish that, and I'm glad to publish the letters.
Yeah. Now, I'm curious, as the national conversation, it seems, is turning pretty anti-immigration, have you seen a change in the way that your readers are responding to coverage in the Glenwood Post Independent? Is our local sentiment changing in that same regard? Are we following the national trend? Are we different?
I don't think so. I think that Donald Trump gave people who held anti-immigrant and views that you could describe differently than that license to be louder. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's a majority in the country. I don't think that's a majority in the Valley. I certainly do hear from those people who have those closely held views.
Yeah, and the Glenwood Post Independent hosted a forum on this topic as well. What were some of the, what did you learn from that experience?
What I learned there, and I balanced that panel very carefully. Lou Valario, the Garfield County Sheriff, he's one of the original sin people. You know, mm-hmm. if you came into the country illegally, you broke the law and you shouldn't be here. I had Tom Jankowski, who is a conservative Republican, who frankly, as an employer here, favors immigration reform. And I think he represents Colorado Republicans fairly well, who just have a realistic understanding of the fact that this is part of the fabric of this state.
This is Aspen Public Radio. You're listening to Valley Roundup, analysis and commentary of news from the Roaring Fork Valley. I'm Elizabeth Stewart Severy. This week, we talk with Randy Essex, who's in his final week as editor of the Glenwood Springs Post-Independent, about some of the biggest issues he's covered in his time here. Randy will be leaving the Roaring Fork Valley for a position at the Detroit Free Press. We'll be back in just a moment. Now, Randy, one of the first issues that you tackled here was housing, including a series in 2015. Can you tell me a little bit about what surprised you in starting that series or in moving here and looking at the housing issues in the Roaring Fork Valley?
Well, I think that during the recession, the crunch for rental properties eased a bit. Mm-hmm. People weren't selling their houses, so they were renting them out. And I got here really as the market started to rebound very strongly, and as vacation rentals started to be part of the scene.
Oh, what an interesting time.
And it was clear that to be a cop, to be a nurse, to be a journalist, to be a teacher, mm-hmm. It was very, very difficult to live in the community where you worked. And I talked to people. It's that process of let's identify the most important issues in the community. Well, this is a no-brainer. There were people who said, why are you doing this? This is a long-standing issue. But it was that post-recession rebound, the fact that people were selling properties that they had been holding on to during the recession, and then the vacation rentals coming in just made it all the tighter. And I think that we did the reporting. We did a nice project on that with a video that mm-hmm. Was even on Rocky Mountain PBS. And we then had a forum. You know, it's that third piece of it. How can we help solve the problem? Scott Gilbert with Habitat for Humanity said things that he heard from developers and city managers at the forum led him to shift a little bit more toward multi-family housing for Habitat homes instead of individual homes. And I heard, I think it was the Carbondale city manager say, yeah, I could spend all day on housing, transportation, and childcare. And if we think about what it's like to raise a family here, those three issues
kind of define everyone's life.
Yeah, absolutely. So when the Grand Avenue Bridge closes, it's not just a detour. It's a giant disruption of, you know, housing, transportation, childcare. And childcare is really scarce. We've done a little bit of reporting on that, too. That might be one of the hidden issues here.
Right, that maybe your successor can take up and carry that torch. Now, affordable housing and the imbalance between cost of living and wages is certainly an issue here in the Roaring Fork Valley, but it's not unique to this area. I mean, we see these issues in pockets across the nation. I'm wondering if there are things that you noticed here, if there are components of this discussion that are unique to our area, if there are things that you haven't seen elsewhere.
Well, I think that in one way, this is a rural area, and then you have very cosmopolitan Aspen, and that filters down valley so that you have educated, really well-to-do retirees, semi-retirees, for towns of 6,000, 10,000 people, mm-hmm. I think that there's a level of sophistication and expectation that just doesn't match the pay.
Interesting, yeah.
So you have rural wages, and then you don't have the critical mass of people that create amenities like childcare and, you know, certain other things. So I think that, this is true in resort areas around the in the West, certainly, that the wages are kind of stuck in a rural set. But since that series came out, and we did, I talked to Mark Zandi, who's a nationally quoted economist, mm-hmm. About housing costs nationwide, and we're seeing this around the country now. There's no incentive to build lower end housing. The lower end housing that's being built are for young single professionals. So you get 700 feet, 600 feet, 900 feet. You see it in Denver, for example, and that's happening. So the government has moved away from housing projects, which is probably good because those are crummy places for the most part, to Section 8. The landlords who get Section 8 vouchers don't really have any incentive to renovate and mm-hmm. and there's no incentive to build at the low end. So I think that that housing is an issue that's going to spread nationally.
Well, and here it's interesting because the cost of building is so high in parts of the Roaring Fork Valley and Aspen, for example, that it really is difficult to build at the low end. I mean, I don't even know what the low end in Aspen is right now.
Right.
In terms of cost.
And more broadly, Kate Gazunas, who's head of the Garfield County Housing Authority, says that a family making the median household income mm-hmm. in Garfield County cannot buy a house east of Newcastle.
Wow.
And that was a year ago, and I've seen Newcastle property values go up this year. So that might be Silt now. And in a couple of years, that might be Rifle.
Now, there's talk of a regional housing authority, and I think some of the criticism of that kind of an idea connects to what you just brought up, that perhaps a regional housing authority means that we just keep pushing the issue to the next town down, to the next town over. Do you have thoughts about regional housing authority, or what kind of solutions and movement and change have you seen in the 2 years since that series started that might work, that might make a difference?
Well, there's a lot more housing going online in Glenwood and the Mid-Valley, and some of that should be attainable to middle-class people, working professionals, cops, nurses, and so forth. I do think that there has to be cooperation among the communities, and Aspen has its housing plan and its own problems with its housing plan, so that does put a crimp in it. And I hear Glenwood Springs and Garfield County officials say, we want to have attainable housing for our professionals, but I don't want to create incentives to build housing to solve Aspen's employment mm-hmm. problem. And I do think that there's some up valley, down valley policy or political friction that isn't necessarily out in the open. RAFTA is another aspect of that, where some Garfield County politicians, elected officials, feel mm-hmm. like RAFTA is a way for Pitkin County and Aspen to control land use in Garfield County. So Garfield County won't become, it contributes money to RAFTA, but it won't become a full member.
Right. Now, in a 2015 editorial, you wrote, "Discussion of income inequality in America, a serious conversation about a serious issue, generally is conducted in the language of division. Our local solutions will come, though, only if we believe we are all in it together. Parachute to Aspen, rich, poor, and in the middle, we are, whether we recognize it or not." Is that still kind of where you stand now?
I wrote that.
You did.
Good.
Housing connects to another issue that you've dealt with certainly a lot in the past several months in Glenwood Springs, which is transportation and commuting. And you've brought this up a couple times. When people can't afford to live where they work, they have to get there somehow. And you've seen a lot of people stuck behind the wheel. It seems a little bit poetic that one of the first issues that you covered getting here, one of the first editorials that I've seen that you wrote was advocating for the Grand Avenue Bridge. And now that project is complete. What do you think remains there? What will we see in the next 3 years with this topic?
I would, if I were staying, and I've left word that I think that transportation is a big issue over the next year or two. Glenwood Springs has some other infrastructure questions. The South Bridge project, which would create another path to Highway 82. Mm-hmm. I think that Glenwood at some point will look at whether it needs its airport and whether that land could be used for housing. And if there were more housing there, it would change transportation toward this end of the valley.
So some people might be doing the reverse commute.
And it's also, we did a data story that showed that Garfield County has the most fatalities on Interstate 70 west of the Continental Divide. Yeah. And that's because when you get out of the mountains and through the canyon, you think it's flat and you speed up. Mm-hmm. You also have people who have been driving and working all day who are tired. I was disheartened that Garfield County declined to subsidize the hogback bus route through the winter. Mm-hmm. It was very popular during the bridge detour, and I think that you need to incentivize and find a way to move people outside of individual vehicles, because the population's going to grow. It's not going to grow as much as the state demographer says, but you'll have more people on these roads. And it's dangerous. It is life sapping.
Yeah.
I also, my last editorial, which ran Monday, mm-hmm. was calling on CDOT to give people more time to walk across Grand Avenue. CDOT's job is to move cars. I have seen in the wintertime, I've seen old people start across Grand Avenue by the Safeway or at 23rd Street. And if it's a little bit slick, the don't walk light starts to tick down and they turn back. And I'm not sure how they get across. I think that, you know, older people with physical challenges, people with children, that it's not a pedestrian-friendly town, and it's a shame.
Now, Randy, your position when you leave here and head to the Detroit Free Press, you'll be Senior Content Director for Business and Auto News. Is this going to mean a step away from really engaging in the nitty-gritty details of life in a small town, like you just said, like advocating for longer time at crosswalks or being the voice for some of the people who don't have access to power?
So as much as my critics won't, I will miss commentary writing. I hadn't written an editorial for 30 years when I came here, and I found it, and I found my voice a little bit. It's probably been the favorite part of my job, is directly engaging the community and trying to kick up some dust.
Mm-hmm.
However, the model of find the most important issues, do the best journalism we can around them, and then use the brand. I mean, the Post-Independent's 125 years old. The Detroit Free Press covered the Civil War, for goodness sakes. So there's some brand equity in the community.
Yeah.
And that model works with any issue.
Great. Thank you so much for joining me today, Randy.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Valley Roundup on Aspen Public Radio. I'm Elizabeth Stewart Severy. My guest today was Randy Essex, outgoing editor and publisher of the Glenwood Springs Post-Independent. Randy will soon be director of content at the Detroit Free Press. Also, thank you to our producer, Kristen Kay, for keeping things running. You can get a rundown of links and more information on the stories and issues covered on this show on our website, aspenpublicradio.org. If you missed any part of today's show, you can listen at our website or download the podcast wherever you typically get your podcasts. I'm Elizabeth Stewart Severy. Thanks for listening. Valley Roundup is a production of Aspen Public Radio News.